life might hand you budgets, schedules, family, and responsibility. But driving shouldn't be just another chore.
We're here to help you find a car you love. Something that fits your budget and your needs, but is fun to drive and makes you look back. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul, and this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate. We're back with a Topic Tuesday of some very interesting discussion points, and we've got a great debate too. This is going to be awesome, but you guys have really responded to the last episode. That was the color-corrected Focus RS and Honda Civic Type R. And if you haven't seen that, that will be coming to Amazon. I'm really excited for you to see it. And I know we've been teasing it endlessly, but thank you for all the comments and bringing all that stuff to our attention. We really, really appreciate it. And it was just fun to share. It was
great. Had to be snotty for a second. They are all actually color-corrected. Some better than others, but this one actually gave it a look. We actually kind of enjoyed the look. You guys responded to that. Thank you. And you just, you know what? We've gotten some really great commentary on all of these first three episodes. I am actually less than a week away from delivering the last of our six brand new episodes. And as Paul said, those will all be on Amazon and Vimeo coming shortly. So we get to share them with more people. But those of you that have seen it so far, thank you. Thank you for getting up early. Thank you for setting your DVR. Thank you for helping us. This honestly helps the sponsors get awareness, and that allows us to make more shows. So thank you to all of you that are doing that. That will still matter on Amazon and Vimeo, because you'll still see that it's presented by Covercraft. We just love that those guys are with us. Of course, we also have Auto Tempest and Brush Hero and Griot's Garage as part of this season. All of those guys are supporting us because they know you guys are watching. So thank you for doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. And please don't forget to use the code EVERYDAY at both Griot's and Covercraft. So Covercraft, you will get free shipping in the U.S. Griot's Garage, you'll get 10% off your order. And I'm already hearing of people using the code and thinking, you know what, I think I'll grab a cover. And I had a great lunch. Like I said before in the last podcast, I am still in California. This is podcast number two while I'm in California. And for those of you who are listening for podcast back, we're sorry that if I miss you. And I've had one meetup so far, which has been great. And that was up at Alice's Restaurant up in Woodside, which is up at the top of the hill. It kind of crests over to the ocean going down the other side. And it's clearly the bike and car enthusiast hangout. It was a car show in and of itself.
Doesn't sound pretty at all.
The food was good, but it's all about the cars. And they're in the midst of the trees and the forest. And
Cool.
It's totally the destination. I mean, squiggly road leading up to this place, and it was a lot of fun. It was great.
You're going to try to do another meetup later this week, aren't you? I mean, you don't have the details yet.
No details yet. I'm going to try to do that. Still working on that right now. And again, apologies for any background noise. I have switched housing locations, so I'm actually in a hotel now, and there might be a little bit of traffic rumbling anyway. So I apologize in advance. This will not be the usual thing, and then we'll get back to the studio when I get back. But it's been fun. Like I said before, I'm doing some consulting work for Waymo in Mountain View, California, and it is quite interesting. I wish I could share. It's really fascinating, but it's a lot of fun. So I'm happy and very intrigued to be here while you're finishing up episodes, and thank you so much. I'm really just thrilled that we're getting everything cleared, and then we're off to shoot season four, which is crazy.
We are, but also part of this fall, it's official now. Go to everydaydriver.com, go to the Adventures tab. All of the info is now up for our Utah meetup. That is the first weekend of October this year. That is the 5th through the 7th. You will see all the details. We're being crazy. It's not just some cool meals and some track time and a road tour. There's also the possibility of mountain biking. We're going to try to fit it all in. We've talked about it related to Park City. We're going to try to do it all. So you can go to the Adventure tab and you can look there. We've tried to answer all the questions with an FAQ and a lot of links to get you various places. Again, this is an a la carte trip, so whatever you'd like to do, you certainly can. You'll see the registration stuff. The registration is mainly just so we can keep track of who's coming to what. So all of that is in there. It is available now. We're very excited to hang out with a lot of you and just show you this area and just hang out in this area. We've had a few more people come through town this summer, just coming through Park City and wanting to say hello, and we love that as well.
Yeah, but pretty cool.
We're excited to just host a group, show you cool roads, show you our great local track, and we might even mountain bike. Look at that.
And we promise not to beat on you, because we know we're at altitude and we're acclimated, of course, and we'll have been mountain biking all summer long.
True.
We realize that. So it's less of a, hey, we're going to come beat on you, and more just, hey, let's get out, show you the forest. You kind of understand where we're coming from and just share in one of our loves too, which is going to be a lot of fun.
Well, Yes, but I should also give a caveat, and this is mentioned on the site. If you don't mountain bike, don't come on the mountain bike ride. If you're a person that you're like, I'd like to try mountain biking, not the ride for you. But if right, you are a person right. that does mountain bike but haven't mountain biked here, come on, let's do this. We'd have to put some sort of like base level because, you know, yeah, if you never mountain biked, this will not be a good day.
Exactly. We want you to have a good weekend because the mountain biking will probably precede the weekend's yes. events. We don't want to, like, you know, be in your hotel room like, he's turning purple. Why are you turning purple?
I hate those guys. I hate them.
Why did I do this? Why did I come? No, we don't want that.
For Topic Tuesday, we have one that I'm struggling with a bit. I've got a few, but I'm very excited to hear what you've got on it, Paul. The Topic Tuesday is, it came to you from You Know Nothing Flow on Instagram, wrote in and said, top five cars that are great to drive but terrible to own. I thought of three I really like. They're still kind of thinking of others. I also have a really good car debate coming up from Dr. Al. And after that, of course, many, yes, many questions many. Coming up as well from you guys. Thank you.
Yeah, I actually kind of blew out the topic. I have 12 cars on the list.
Good. You're balancing me because I was worried. I didn't feel confident about a lot of my choices. And so I have three I really like, but you have 12.
Yeah.
That balances the world well. I like it. 12?
Well, I kept thinking of stuff. I was like, oh, well, that's going on the list because of various reasons. But I'm so glad you guys are responding to the Topic Tuesday thing because we've started to integrate
it,
as you can tell, a little bit more. We're hoping to get to it as a weekly thing. And if you guys have good topics that you think would be not the barroom brawl kind of thing, not the bench clearing subject, but more along the lines of this could change, my opinion could change on this in a week or an hour or whatever.
Okay.
And it's just good, healthy discussion about whatever. So that's why I like this. Hey, great to drive, but terrible to own. And keep in mind, terrible to own, I have gas mileage as the terrible to own part. So this can mean a lot of things,
all right?
I don't mean just, wow, you know, it's always broken down, even though that's most of the cars on my list, but...
Yeah, I mean, I thought about
various
cars
reasons.
Really, really don't want anything to ever go wrong, and yet you know it will.
Exactly.
That was kind of my category, yeah.
And this is based on my own experience, either having, you know these cars because of friends who had them, or, you know, just be in close proximity and see the... You know, like I said, see the generation of the car. The wow, yeah, I'm sure glad you own that, not me, kind of thing. But
sure.
I just kept writing, and I thought, ooh, that's kind of interesting. So I'm actually wanting to get your take on some of these things on here because just kind of interesting. So I'm diving right in, and I'm starting with a friend, Zach. You know Zach. He's a friend of mine in California. He had a 1991 Alfa Romeo Spider. So this is the Series 4 from 1990 to 1993.
The Spider is one of the three on my list.
Is it really?
Absolutely. As a just, I mean, because it's an icon. It's an icon of the brand. It's a car that on paper does everything right. Plus, it has Italian flair. It is a rear wheel drive roadster. It's a convertible. Oh, look at how nice it looks in the Alfa Romeo. All of these things are great when it runs.
Absolutely. And his. Never ran. He always had some sort of, hey, did you bring the Alfa over? No, it needs insert mechanical issue here, or the top was ripped and the top didn't work and it's now raining out and on and on and on. I was just like, buddy, you own this car. You're dumping money into it. You never drive it. And then by the other problem with these are, by the time you get around to fixing all the stuff and sprucing it up and now it is running and looks great and runs right, then you sell it. I'm going, what?
Yeah.
Why didn't you do all this stuff so you could enjoy it and drive it? Anyway, it's beating my head against the wall. So that is topping my list. But interestingly, as an asterisk, the Alfa Romeo Giulia Quadrifoglio. This is such a brand new car. It remains to be seen. But on one hand, it's an Alfa. On the other hand, it's a brand new platform. Untried, untested, but it's untried and untested, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
So yeah. I just had that as I'm starring that off to the side. But then continuing with my list. Well, yeah, go
also,
ahead.
Also, on the Quadrifoglio, I see where you're going on the Giulia Quadrifoglio, and I thought about that because our experience has not been the experience of others. Our experience with that car has been brilliant.
It's been awesome.
It just ran.
Yeah.
We had no problems. We beat on it, and it continued to start and run and work and never
there
was an issue.
In a word, it was
exactly.
normal.
That's the greatest way to put it. But yet we've heard of other people that had press cars, obviously a different one than we had, that had constant problems. We've also driven a base version, and it was great. No issues at all. It was just, it just ran and was perfect. It ran like you would expect a car to run. So the question is, what's the truth?
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And they've got to be out there long enough for people to know. And that's why I think your asterisk is deserved there, because clearly there was a car in the press fleet. Well, I mean, we even told the joke. At the time we got the press car, there were three Quadrifoglio, Giulia Quadrifoglio in the press fleet. Three of them.
So painful to hear again.
One of them had been, I think, the week before, or 2 weeks before, had been wrecked by a journalist. And I think that was the one that went on that was super problematic for others.
Oof.
There was the one we had, which was flawless. And there was one, and the only description we heard was, they can't get it started and none of the techs know why. Which is not the answer you want.
Especially, I mean, that's embarrassing because people are asking for the car. And this was, what, a year and a half ago when everyone's asking for it because it's the hot new item. People want to review it.
Yeah.
And the answer is, it won't start, so you
But it's not just it won't start. None of the techs know why. I mean, come on.
Wow. So that's off to the side, but, you know, we have a lot of love for Alfa. We do. It's just...
And that's a great car, too, yeah.
It's a spectacular car. All right, so continuing on for the early years of the Dodge Viper. How about a 94 Dodge Viper? I'm sure it's great to drive and awesome for somebody else to own. Now, if you have a Viper and you have a bone to pick with me, please write to me and tell me why it is great to own. But I just think, the top was fussy would be a nice word to describe
the
top.
You're being generous. You're being generous, yes.
A nice descriptor for that. And it's just, it was a truck wearing a car, even though I know Ralph Giles just recently described the generation of the engine and how it isn't really a Ram truck engine, but still, it's kind of like, you know, an engine wearing a car, like a cape.
Yeah.
It's barely there. It's just all engine. You straddle the engine and everything
just
else
about,
is kind of like, the build quality is kind of like, okay, it actually closed this time. The door closed. Hey, look at that. You know, that kind of thing. Great for other people to own.
Okay.
And speaking of which, I don't want to preempt the video coming out, but any Ferrari that has to have the engine taking out of it to maintain it, that's on my list of, wow, that must be great to drive and terrible to own. You have to do what to maintain the car? The engine has to, what? What are you talking about? No car does that.
That's one of the other three on my short list. Is the Ferrari 355? We've got a fast blast of that coming in the next week or so. We loved driving that car. It was brilliant to drive.
Awesome.
It was very fun to be in and around.
Yeah.
I love the look of it. But it is an engine out maintenance car, and that's just that nightmare doesn't even cover that. I'm sorry. But when the maintenance, here's the thing, when the maintenance, your normal maintenance on your car is the price of another car.
Right.
This
right.
is not okay. It's just not okay.
You mean I could buy a used GTI for that just to have the engine taken out?
Sometimes a new GTI. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Sheesh. Okay. So moving on from there, I would say any original E-Type that still operates with the Lucas Electric or doesn't operate with the Lucas Electrics.
Yeah. More doesn't operate than does. Yeah.
Or how about like an early 90s XJS or something like that? Or XKR, XK, anything like
Lucas
that.
Lucas Electrics, get home before dark. Yeah.
Well, there's a car that sticks out in my mind that a neighbor across the street had when I was growing up. And it was a Triumph TR7. British Leyland was the factory, and these were built, when were they built? 75 to 81. I think his was the later year. Like, we theoretically have sorted the problems out of this car, and it barely ran. And when it did, he did take me for a ride, and it just made this huge impression on me because the pop-up headlights, this doorstop wedge shape.
Sure.
It was light and nimble despite having 100 horsepower or whatever. It was very anemic, but still it was this little cool, nimble sports car. And my cool neighbor, well, he was actually a guy that lived at home with his parents and had this car that didn't run. But anyway, he seemed cool to you.
Yeah.
At the time, he seemed really cool. And he was, in a band and all this stuff. And it was like, oh, man, take me for a ride. And he's like, I'll have to get it running first. It still needs a bunch of stuff. And I thought,
oh, man.
Okay, what does that mean? It's a car. Shouldn't it just work? It's a car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my 8-year-old brain or 10-year-old brain is sort of like, you just turn it on, right? It's a car. I don't get it. Yeah. Anyway.
But when you're 8, it's also, I'm going to grow up and I'm going to live with my parents and be in a band and have an awesome car. And then you grow up and you realize that's not anything to aspire to. That's all bad. Yeah,
it's all bad. Okay, so any DeLoreans on my list, you know, despite the lack of power, probably awesome to drive just by the looks. It might drive terribly, but great to drive because of the experience, because you're, you know, driving a DeLorean. I mean,
okay.
Endless Back to the Future jokes. I mean, do you get tired of those after a time and then finally like, hey, let's just
Matt Farah got so tired of them, he sold the car. Yeah.
There you go. So, again, despite the lack of power, it's probably cool to drive and all that stuff. Terrible to own. That brought me to the 1989 launch of Delta Integrale. Sort of, hey, cool car when it runs. Who works on your Lancia in the U.S.?
Yeah. Who works on your Lancia? There's a shirt right there. It's just, yeah.
I put the M3, the E90 and E92 M3 on my list.
Huh, okay.
And I alluded to this earlier, and it's because of fuel mileage. The cars are awesome. I would love to own one, but that is one heck of a thirsty V8 because you're not just puttering around in this car. You have an E90 M3. Your foot's in it to the floor everywhere you go because E90 M3. You know what I mean? I just remember throwing gas. I couldn't spray gas at that car fast enough. It would just
absorb. You practically had to pump around. Yeah, I take your point.
Yeah, I think it absorbed oil up through the asphalt into the... It just sucked everything out. Anyway.
The third one I had on my list, maybe on your list as well, and I think it's a poster child for problems with this brand in perception and everything. And that's the Maserati Quattroporte.
That was on my list. That's the last one here. The first generation.
But here's the thing. It's got a fantastic sound to it. The sound makes you go, what is that? I mean, it's three blocks away, and you're like, what is that that's coming?
It's
that sounds
four-door
amazing.
It's a four-door Ferrari.
When they first came out, it was the four-door Ferrari. Oh, my gosh. The reason these are so cheap now, if you look to buy a used one, please don't do that. You're probably better off buying a used Phaeton. The reason they're so cheap now is because all I ever heard about them was horror stories of maintenance. Horror stories of build quality. And they're nice to sit in, too. They're decent looking. They sound great. They're nice to sit in. You think, where's the problem? The problems are everywhere. The problems are immense. And this is why they are so unbelievably cheap now used. I think that just is practically ruling the list.
Hey, what a great car for me not to own. Awesome. And two more on my list here. I don't mean to, this is not a shot, but how about early Lotus Esprits? Are those really in the reliable, or are they kind of a money pit? Great to drive. Ooh, it needs something else. Ooh. Yeah, I think those are on the
list.
And
where do you get the something else and all that? I totally get it. We're hoping to put a fast blast of one of those on camera in the near future, and that's a car I've always wanted to have. We're talking about the early James Bond film Lotus Esprits.
Yeah.
That's on our list. We're trying to get that on camera here soon, and that's just – I'm very excited to drive it, but I agree with you. It feels like one of those cars where you're praying that nothing goes wrong because if it does, what do you do?
Well, continue praying. I don't know. I keep coming back to the fact the discussion around this car is four-cylinder turbo. And then everybody's kind of going, well, you built a supercar. You built something hot. Why would you put a little tiny turbocharged engine? And nowadays, it's come full circle, and we're back to, wow, little tiny displacement engines, giant turbos.
Yeah.
That's where the power is at. It's come full circle as a car, as a recipe.
Interesting
and
point.
They are ripe for doing that again. They don't have to go V8. Yeah. You don't have to go V6. Yeah. How about some 2-liter, 2.5-liter, 4-cylinder, hot, turbocharged Esprit? That would be amazing.
But if it's light enough, certainly. I mean, look at the little tiny engine in my Elise, you know, that's not turbocharged. Right. Put a supercharger on it, and it's a rocket ship. I mean, yeah, I totally hear you.
Last on my list here, are RX-7s making this list just because of... Not because of reliability. They're awesome to drive. We love RX-7s and RX-8s. But are those rotary engine cars on the list just because of the giant mystery at the end of your mileage tunnel? It could keep running forever. It could just be a money pit. It's a fuel mileage issue, too.
Yes, but it's a high-maintenance engine. And I don't mean high-maintenance in that it's just going to break. I mean, did you check your oil? When's the last time you checked your oil? Are you sure you checked your oil? Oh, look, it's still burning oil. Oh, look, I need another quart. I mean, this is just the reality of these engines. I need to drive it. I need to make sure that I actually wind it all the way out. I need to make sure I drive it enough. It doesn't like short trips. I mean, they're incredible engines to drive. That is a great one to put on the list because they really are incredibly fun to drive, but they're high maintenance.
I was just thinking of that 2011 RX-8 that we drove, and I'm going, wow, this is brilliant.
The R3 was really fun. It was great.
Such a question mark in my mind, and it could be amazing for years with zero issues. And then there's others that owners can't get rid of them fast enough. And I think, okay, well, that's a bummer because the chassis is so great. And I love how low and centered and how small that engine is. I love the concept of rotaries. I wish, well, we'll see. Mazda might bring something back in hybrid form or something. We'll see. But I don't feel like it's quite dead to the industry yet, but yeah, just the recipe was just such a question mark in my mind. So
well, and it remains Mazda's kind of pet project. There's just Mazda keeps tinkering with it because they think it's cool, and it is cool.
Oh, yeah,
but do you want the company's side project as your primary car? I don't know. You know what I mean?
I mean, they won Le Mans 1991. They won Le Mans. I get it.
They did. They did. Yes, I'm not debating that, but I'm just still. It's still their pet project, whether they won Le Mans or not.
Garage project out back. We're actually still tinkering with it, despite making a lot of power. We're still working the kinks out. Yeah, not what you want. That's my list. I thought I could keep going, and I thought, we'll end it there. But if you've got a bone
list,
to pick,
well,
especially the Viper, and you're about to, send hate mail,
you're just expecting Viper mail. That's interesting.
I'm expecting Viper mail. I am.
Okay.
We have yet to drive all the generations of the Viper, by the way. We need to put those three cars on camera together.
Would be cool. Would be cool for sure. Yeah.
What else? Guys, thank you. You Know Nothing Flow, thank you for the question. And like I said, if you've got something that is just, the ongoing, because this list could be very healthily debated, up one side, down the other, you know what I mean? But if you've got a topic Tuesday that you want us to cover, I'm open, I'm open to suggestions. So we've got a list of stuff going here that we're curating, but otherwise, let us know what you think. And if you've got your own debate, which we will get to after the break here, please write to us, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com or on the website. And I keep saying under the About tab on the website. If you go there, you'll see Contact right there. And a lot of people do that.
Yep.
Just contact us right there with your story. And a little bit of punctuation would be awesome. So just keep that in mind.
Ideally, paragraphs are – we love paragraphs. That's a weird sentence I can't believe I say as often as I do. But we love paragraphs. They're great.
Awesome, guys. Well, we will cover that debate, Dr. Al's question, when we come back. And suddenly we're talking about underwear. Yes, underwear. We never talk about underwear, but everybody needs it. And new underwear is way better than old. They've got to be comfortable, so you should get MeUndies.
If you think about the fact we have subscriptions for everything, you can buy your underwear online. You can get an underwear subscription. I know you might think this is a little bit out there, but here's the thing. If you go to MeUndies right now, there is a no-risk trial offer.
Think of it this way. The right underwear is as important as the right car that we choose for you on our debate. So you've got to have good, comfortable underwear that stays put.
Because you're listening to this show, you can get 15% off your first pair and free shipping. All you got to do is go to MeUndies.com/driver. I don't need to hear about it, but you can go get underwear there.
The first 25 folks to send a proof of purchase, which is a screenshot of your purchase or the receipt, you will get another pair free if you send that proof of purchase to gift@podcast1 with driver in the subject line. You will soon have another pair in your collection.
They've also got hoodies. They've got really cool pants you can hang out in. Men, women, it can be shipped right to you.
Go to MeUndies.com/driver. Yes, MeUndies.
Everybody's got a to-do list. You drop off the dry cleaning, you pick up some milk. I've got an idea. Let's save hundreds of dollars in car insurance.
And the good thing is, you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance.
Having extra money in your pocket might be the most rewarding thing on your to-do list today. You can find a lot of weird and surprising things in cars. I mean, some people have, petrified French fries or melted crayons. But one thing that shouldn't surprise you are Continental belts.
I'll bet you didn't know. They're original equipment in tens of millions of FCA, Ford, and GM vehicles that roll off the assembly line. They're also original equipment on the majority of BMWs and Volkswagens.
Now Continental is launching an aftermarket line of the Multi V-Belt.
It's their original equipment technology series.
And Continental has an OE technology series multi-V-belt for 98% of the vehicles on the road in the US and Canada. Hey, you get enough surprises working on cars and trucks already. A belt shouldn't be one of them.
So go with the Continental OE technology series multi-V-belt. It's the belt with original equipment pedigree. You can get the full story by visiting oetechnologyseries.com.
We're back with a car debate on this Tuesday's podcast. We have it for Dr. Al, who's currently in Seattle, Washington. He moved there from Manhattan, which obviously is a major switch in how you use your car. And as a result, he's now commuting 80 miles a day, which he did not do in Manhattan, if you're following along with the story. His other concern, right, of course, is the fact that not only is he commuting 80 miles a day, but he pretty much every weekend is doing about a 150-mile drive from Seattle to Vancouver. So this car is just getting road miles. He has a 2010 GTI with a DSG that he's had for a long time. He's a new doctor. He's got some money. He's looking for a new car. This is where we start, but Pacific Northwest weather is a big issue here.
By the way, Dr. Al, you probably know my family lives up in the Pacific Northwest area, up in Tacoma area, and every time I go, I try to get up to the shop, so just Google theshopclubs.com and you'll find the address. It's really fantastic. You've got to go there if you're, it's a restaurant, it's great, it's an Ethan Stoll restaurant, the food's excellent, there's cars, and it's a meetup spot. Anyway, I could go on, but you've got to go there.
You do go on. And actually, you go on enough that I'm sad I haven't been there yet, so we have to solve that for sure.
Yeah, we do need to solve that. All right, so this commute is, wow, this is wrenching, but all right, I'm glad you're doing this, and I'm really intrigued by these kind of parameters that you've given us with your current car, and then you do allude to the things that your friends drive, the kinds of cars that your friends drive, and you said not that I'm keeping up with the Joneses, that's not really on my mind.
But he's in the doctor parking lot.
But he is in the doctor parking, and he's a new doc. And, you know, it's part of the email. I was thinking, all right, have we covered cars for doctors? Have we done that? I know we've done dentists. We've done realtors. What else? A few others. But I don't know that we've actually covered doctors. And I thought, all right,
okay,
we can't just say 911s. We can't just do that. And I did not choose anything Porsche. As a matter of fact,
wow, look at
I'm
you.
I'm stuck on one car for you.
I've got three.
I'm glad.
I like it.
I kept coming back to this, and it all starts with your story about the current car that is your 2010 GTI. It's the dual clutch, so DSG that he brought from New York City.
Yeah.
Likes the fuel economy, likes the nimbleness. But he said, it fails to meet my winter needs and my desire for a cool car. And before you say, well, winter doesn't happen in Seattle, it actually does. It can really snow really heavily. And then especially if you're going up the canyons, if you're going up skiing or just going to, say, eastbound or even north, it definitely can get bad.
It's that drive from Seattle to Vancouver in all weather year round. That's where he's really thinking about this car's got to be weather versatile.
Yeah, right.
I am the weirdo that would keep driving the rear-wheel drive with the snow tires, but I am not normal. We've discovered this in 300-plus podcasts. So, I can understand your desire to have something fun that is still going to have all-wheel drive. I'm still going to say to you, Alan, you hear it coming already. You hear it coming. I don't care if you wind up with something all-wheel drive. Please get yourself winter tires to tackle what you're doing.
That is the key, and you'll have both seasons. And speaking of that, you've kind of toyed with the idea about maybe just one car, or should I get, you know, less of the put all my money in that car and maybe just an S2000 or an MX-5, something like that.
Yeah.
Manual transmission, fun rear-wheel drive sports car for the summer, and that's in contrast to the practical daily car. I like how you're thinking here. I'm curious as to where you went.
Well, I like the idea, Al. I mean, plenty of times we've said get an extra car, get a fun car, but honestly,
get an extra car with your extra money. Right.
Seriously. But here's the thing. Honestly, in the description you're giving of your life and the way you use your car, I have to honestly ask the question. If you wind up with a $10,000, $15,000 fun convertible car, when are you driving that? Because what I hear from you is that this 80-mile round-trip commute, you want a comfortable commute car, which is probably not going to be your inexpensive convertible. And on the weekends, you're doing a commute 150 miles to get to Vancouver to see family. So you're probably not going to take that car again then. So unless you – and you don't mention that you do – unless you go out and just seek out fun-to-drive time, I feel like you'd be buying an extra car that's not going to get the use that you would enjoy it for, so I stay with one car for you, which I don't normally do. Normally, anybody says, I'm thinking two cars, I go, let's get at least two. But in this case, I'm just staying one car for you, man. I want to find a car that you love driving that does all of this heavy mileage you want to do and is still a fun place to be.
Okay, that's excellent. I like that. All right, so the budget we're working with is $60,000, which is a lease, okay? So if it's a brand new car, $60,000 is the capper for leasing. But if he's buying certified Paul-owned, I mean pre-owned, then he's capping it at $40,000. And he said, I'm even open to a diesel for the torque and the mileage, which I get, but he's not sure about the resale value down the road if that's
and
if
I,
he should consider
that. And I
don't
think... I mean, look, the diesel would be great for mileage, but here's the thing. You're already complaining a little bit that your 2010 GTI DSG is not quite fun enough or interesting enough. Anything we get you into diesel isn't going to be any better.
I'm with you on that. I don't think so either. It will solve the mileage issue, and that will be the only thing you love, and you'll have to keep reminding yourself what great mileage you're getting to overcome
any
lack of fun.
That's
you know?
Not right.
Yeah, or power. And that's what I want. I liked your list of, here's what my friends drive. He said, my buddies drive cars like a Cayman S, a Macan S, 911 GTS is on the list, Range Rover SVR, and an AMG GT. I like your friends. I want to hang out with your friends.
Yeah, no kidding.
Holy cow, I want to drive their cars.
We're coming with more and more reasons to just randomly go to Seattle. Yeah, it's great. Anyway,
seriously.
Yeah.
All right, so like I said, I thought about this, Dr. Al. I have thought about this for a full day.
Wow.
And
okay.
I couldn't decide. I thought, no, I don't want to just be a cliche because, again, we're dealing with the doctor car. So what is enthusiast for him, but it doesn't scream, hey, new money or anything like that, but it's also still a really good enthusiast car and small and nimble and fun. And I've landed on a car. It struck me today, middle of the afternoon. It just struck me.
Really? Okay. All right.
Are you ready, Dr. Al?
I have three and a wild card.
Oh, you do?
I'm very curious to hear where you went.
You can tell I'm itching to tell you.
Please. No, please. Go for it.
All right, here we go. It's the 2018 Audi RS3. RS3, my friend. Brand new. So they start at 54, but I optioned mine up to 58. It was just under 60. And I've been intrigued by this car. And so is the press. You've got it. Okay, specs aren't everything, but come on. 2.5 liter, 5-cylinder, turbocharged, 400 horsepower. 400 in a little tiny A3 is what it is.
Yeah.
The RS3 intrigues the daylights out of me. It's all-wheel drive. It really ties into your Volkswagen sort of roots there because it's also a dual clutch. It's the updated interior. It's a nice place to be. It's the hottest of the hot non-hatches. I think you'd scare all your friends as far as, keeping up with them, if you know what I mean. they'd wonder, what is this car that you got? Holy cow, where did that come from? I think it flies under the radar like crazy. It's not an in-your-face, ostentatious. It just looks like car. But yet, 400 horsepower in this little thing? Are you kidding me? I'm all about the RS3 for you. I keep reading specs about it. I've been reading my own reviews. I'm doing my own research. In other words, I'm reading reviews of this thing for the people who have driven it already. And I'm landing on the RS3 for you. It seems brilliant. It seems like you've got time in your life to go own the 911s and the GTs and all that stuff and whatever those future versions of those cars will be. But where you are right now, I think it'll be excellent. It's comfortable, and that's what I'm reading. It's still hot, but the seats are still comfortable.
Yeah.
It's still got a level of, this car is road trip worthy. It's not just, some performance, but it beats you up. It's not like that. It's a good mix of in between, and the front tires, really, they are actually slightly wider than the rears. Audi is focused on handling with this car. Go read about that. Insane. Okay, I blathered on enough. RS3, that's
sold
online.
It. Well done. I like it. I like it. Okay, I have three. I feel like they start obvious and they go less obvious. Then I have a wild card that's almost obvious, except you'll see why I put it in a wild card category. I have to start off with the obvious place. Look, you want to spend – well, actually, you know what? Before I go there, Al, I want to make one quick comment, and that is you're talking about you've got a budget of up to $60,000, but only if you lease. That gives you a lot of car options, and I'm still staying within the rules there, but I do want to say this to you. I don't know that you can, because I think your lease is going to get blown away by the amount of miles you're putting on your car.
Oh, that's a great point. No, that's
I think
just
you,
buy
you
new,
may
you mean?
Have to just buy at $60,000 and deal, because I think my concern is if you lease something, the amount of miles you're going to put on the car, you're probably going to end up spending more in penalties on the back end for having done more mileage that would offset the fact that you should have just bought it in the first place.
That's a great point. So I didn't think of that. That's excellent.
I really wonder, genuinely wonder about you in leasing. I wonder if that's the wrong call here just because of miles. But that's something you have to figure out on the financial side. So I try to stay in a world where, okay, what is genuinely available for around $60,000, lease or buy? And you absolutely could, it's the doctor cliche, you absolutely could get a 911. You could get yourself a 997, which is the last gen up to about 2012, the 997 4S.
Excellent.
You would love that car
anytime
you're commuting. You'd like it in any kind of weather. Yes, it's a little bit of a foregone conclusion. I'm a young doctor and I bought myself a 911. Yes, that's there, but it is a great car. Yeah, I mean,
that's the dichotomy about it. It's got such a perception, but it's a great car and it is truly useful.
For every person that buys a Porsche because they wanted a Porsche, there's also somebody that bought a Porsche because they're really an enthusiast. So this is the only problem with that car is that it's brilliant enough that people just buy it for the badge, but it's also just a great car. So I have to put that out there. You currently have a GTI. For $40,000 or so, you can get yourself the gentleman's hot hatch, the Mercedes GLA AMG.
Excellent.
This is not a CUV, my friend. In spite of how they are trying to sell it, this is the gentleman's hot hatch. Now, new, they're 65 or so. Don't do that. Just buy a used one for around 40.
Oh, you can find them barely used for that.
It is all-wheel drive, faster than your GTI. It's got a great dual-clutch gearbox. This is a riot of a car to drive. It has great seats, nice interior. You can drive this car normally, and you can also inexplicably hoon. So it's just it's a car
t-shirt.
There you go. It's a car that is I just stand by it. If you want to step up from the world of the hot hatch, that's the car for you to be in. So that one's on there. My favorite for you that I don't know that I've recommended before, but I so like it for you because it does everything you want. We've got all-wheel drive world. We've got nice place to be on commute. We've got enthusiast shops. It's all of these things. It's not an obvious car, but I think it would be good for you. Audi TT RS.
I'm interested that we've both gone to Audis for this.
This is
fascinating.
Yes, but a TT RS, come on.
Those are hot.
Cylinder. They're just great. $60,000 in your pocket, you can go get one. Okay?
Oh, heck yeah.
And that's going to be it's you aren't the guy with another 911. As much as they're great, is there another TTRS in your parking lot? Probably not.
True.
Okay?
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool. And if you said to me you were going to be tracking it every weekend, I wouldn't go TTRS. But the way you're going to drive it, that car's going to be brilliant. You're going to love it.
Interesting.
So that is kind of my you didn't necessarily see it coming, but it is kind of my favorite. And then in a, maybe it's obvious, but I wanted to put a wild card. My only non-all-wheel drive on this list is wild card of the BMW M2.
That's up there. That's
because
got to be on the list. You're right.
On one level, you could say, I'm a young doctor and I bought a BMW. But I think the M2 in its current styling is one of those cars that enthusiasts know it's hot. And everybody else just sees a BMW.
It's just car almost. And then you look closer and then it's a BMW. But then you have to look for those wide fender flares. And then, you're right. Enthusiasts know that. But then, most people think, whatever, car.
And if it's your commute car, get it in the DCT. Obviously, we would prefer you got it in the manual. But I understand how you're using it. So get it in the DCT and just enjoy it. And enjoy the fact that it's a normal BMW to a lot of the world. And by the way, have you noticed this car is hot? So you have both those options. Now, of course, it's rear-wheel drive. You're going to be fully reliant on winter tires there. Maybe you wouldn't consider because it's rear-wheel drive. But you could get a used one for $50. Okay.
Yeah.
A great one.
Yeah,
so and take a serious look at that car. I put it in wild card only because it is full rear wheel drive, but you would just love that. And it would be practical and easy to commute in. And then, by the way, it's fun. So those are my four. Hopefully something in there. I would love to see you in a TTRS or possibly an M2, but any of those would work. And honestly, there's a part of me that wants you to explain your Mercedes GLA AMG to your doctor friends. We're like, what is that? Why'd you get that?
Before
and then you blow their
minds.
I kind of like that.
Exactly. Take them for a ride, and then you know they drive it and think, where did this come from? The used ones out there, they're expensive brand new, but they continue to make them, which means more goodness, more used cars, more used GLAs are coming our way. And it's the equivalent of moving from, hey, I'm going from a hot hatch, whether it's the Focus ST or RS, and you moved on up to the gentleman's hot hatch. That's what it is.
Yeah, big time, big time.
They're so much fun to drive, and just, they've got their own personality, for sure. They've just got their own way of doing things and their own ride. And I'm ready for Mercedes product in the U.S., like the A-Class, to come over. Mm. I am really ready for that car.
We'll see. We'll see. Well, we should go on to an absolute pile of social media questions. Al, I hope something there was helpful. Thank you for writing in. And as Paul always says, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com is the place to send your own car debate or through the contact form on the website. I give this public service announcement every now and then. I'm going to do it again. If you write an email for any reason to everydaydriver@gmail.com, we did not get that email.
Right.
So everydaydrivertv@gmail.com is the email address. We welcome all the emails. We read them all. We want to know what you're thinking. So if you have something you want to share, we'd love to hear it. Thank you for listing so many great questions on all the social media places. We always ask for those the day we're recording. I'm going to start off with Andy Chan on Facebook.
Oh, good.
He asks a question that I ponder a lot. How much of an efficiency gain are we really getting out of these electric power steering systems? Because is it a good enough offset for what we've lost, which is organic steering feel?
Hmm.
And Andy, I'm going to say to you that it's not worth the trade-off. I mean, manufacturers are getting like a mile per gallon or two out of this changeout. Now, if you're trying to meet a miles per gallon standard, that mile per gallon or two gain might put you right over the top. But when I look at it from an ownership perspective, you gained me an MPG? One? And I lost steering feel?
My counterpoint there is about production, and it's all about manufacturing these days. And yes, we can argue, and we've said this before, how the electric steering is leaving us cold in some cars. Other cars, keep in mind, the Honda S2000 kind of pioneered this route and everything.
And it's getting better, and everybody does it differently and some better than others.
Yep.
I mean, it's decent in the 86 platform. I'll give it that for sure.
Yeah. I'm just saying. So it's not without its faults, but it's not the evil bugaboo that everybody thinks, oh, it's got electric power steering, it must suck. Not the case. You've got to drive it, and it depends on the car. But I think it's for manufacturing purposes, some miles per gallon, but honestly, I think it's just the ease of manufacturing in a lot of cases, and just more modernized factories. That's my own opinion.
Well, I will say the only thing I actually like about an Andy, and this is going to sound ridiculous, I can't explain to you why, but almost every car I've owned in my adult life has had a power steering pump leak. The only reason I like electric power steering is that's not leaking on my driveway anymore. Otherwise, you can get away with it. I don't want it. Yeah.
Mm, interesting. Okay, there was a design question that I couldn't resist down here from Jordan C. on Facebook. Asked, what are some good beginner books or websites for learning about car design and styling?
Mm. Mm.
I'm going to start with a book called H-Point. It's The Fundamentals of Car Design and Packaging by Jeff Wardle and Stuart Macy. Not very expensive on Amazon, and it gives you an idea of how cars are packaged, because around that is then the styling and the function, and there's so much that goes into it. So look at H-Point, the book, and then there's a lot more. There's, of course, Auto and Design. That's one of my favorites. It's actually an Italian publication, but they publish all the sketches of cars from studios all over the world after the fact.
Only you would know that. That's awesome. I love it.
There used to be car styling from Japan, and those, I still have old old magazines, and those are rare and in demand, and I wish that were still around, but you will start to get immersed. There's car design news. You get a lot of Reese's on there. I will not continue because I could blather on forever about the car design part of it. But yeah, H-Point is your book to start, Jordan.
That's great. I love that one. Let's see. We've got Not Like the One from Friends writes in with, what in the car world, be it a car specifically or tech, are we thinking is a good idea today, but in 5 or 10 years we're going to look back and think that was a terrible idea?
Oh,
I have one.
Oh, you do?
That I don't know if it's going to play out, and that's why I'm putting it on the list, because I just don't know how it's going to play out. I'm going to go back for a second. You remember 10, 15 years ago when you were seeing, if you ever saw any commercials about oil that you would buy to change your oil, one of the primary selling points was you need an oil that's good on startup because the hardest thing on your engine is starting.
Uh-huh.
Remember those commercials?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now fast forward to now. Every car out there has start-stop technology, which, just like the electric steering, is being done for a couple mile per gallon gain. But if you sit and stop and go traffic in any major city, pick your major city, your car is constantly shutting off and restarting over and over and over again. Why is this now no longer a problem? 15 years ago, it was a big issue. We were wearing out the car. Now it's not an issue. I think these cars haven't been around long enough yet for us to know if this is actually causing a problem with longevity, because I suspect it might.
It might, although the commercial was really around the cold start. I mean, if you're just doing the stop-start, there's already a ton of oil already up in the engine.
Yes.
It's already well lubricated. The cold start where all the oil's in the pan. And
I get that.
Okay, that's where they're looking at. But that stop-start technology is hard on starters, and it's hard on batteries. That stuff's going to go faster, in my opinion, if that's what you like. I personally can't stand it, even though it is pretty instantaneous in a lot of cars. It's just, it's one more thing, like, oh yeah, right, it's just a stutter, a hesitate, you know, I'm not a fan, and for emissions and fuel savings,
yeah.
And okay.
I'm not, sure what the solve is. I mean, there's a part of me that wonders if, you know, what the 918 has done and some of these other cars, if that's more the answer, where when you're doing the stop and go kind of stuff, you're actually being driven by an electric motor and then the gas motor is involved when you need it. And so it's not starting and stopping all the time. Maybe that's the – I feel like the start-stop technology is a stopgap. And I feel like over time, those cars are not going to be as reliable. I don't know that. There's no proof. I'm sure at some point I will be proven either right or wrong or crazier than we already thought I was. But I still I always ask the question. And, of course, you and I, anytime we get in a car with that, it annoys us so much we practically want to break the button off the dash. So,
exactly.
Yeah, everybody's different, but I just don't like it.
I thought you were going to say curved TVs. Did you notice how fast those went out of stores? Nobody cared. They just disappeared. It's like, okay.
Well, the one I'm curious about is the roll-up TVs. You've seen those, right? Where they're making,
right.
And I'm serious, where they're making LED panels that are bendable. And so the concept is you would have, you know, it would, I know it sounds like we were back to 1980, but the concept is the screen would roll down or roll up when you need it, and otherwise it wouldn't be there.
Yeah.
So I see the concept. That could actually be usable, except for the fact that I will always think about being in elementary school when, oh, look, it's movie day. But other than that, it is an interesting idea.
It's a roll-up screen in your car on the dash. I got to unroll it to see what my car is.
That's frightening.
All right.
That's frightening.
Okay, there's a debate over on Instagram from KevinBell7 asking us to help settle this. And I don't know if we can, because we have not preempted this. It's a question about the ongoing traffic flow debate. And he says, when driving on a two-lane freeway and the sign says left lane closed ahead, merge right, does that mean get over right now as soon as possible? Or does that mean continue to fly past everybody on the left for as long as possible and then merge right at the very last second? Now, Kevin...
This is a fight in words conversation here, yeah.
Now, Kevin says it is a merge right now, do it immediately, and some of his coworkers say, no. That means pass everyone and then merge when you have to, you know, when the lane actually is closed. And you're asking us to help solve this debate? I don't know that we can.
All bad. All bad.
What do you think?
Well, maybe this is my non-answer, but here is my actual answer. There's a middle ground here. Nothing is worse, honestly, nothing is worse than the guy who is actually sitting with one of his mirrors almost touching the barrels that are pushing him into the other lane.
Yeah, right.
He's gone all the way to the very end, and he has no choice but to force his bumper in front of your car. That guy's just a jerk, okay?
Right.
Because he saw the sign when everybody else did. But on the other end of the spectrum, when you see that sign, it's like a mile or two from when it happens, invariably. And the mass exodus toward the right lane causes traffic. It causes people to slow down unnecessarily, and you wind up with folks who are trying desperately to merge as soon as they possibly can, and it just bottlenecks that right lane. If people – now, look, I will admit, I'm in a world that doesn't exist here. I'm in fantasy land where people understand – people don't even understand how to merge onto a wide-open freeway. So the idea of merging when we're losing a lane –
merging alone. Yeah.
Is way, way beyond the average person. I get it. Whereas a culture not able to handle it. But in a perfect world, that mile should allow everybody to have plenty of time to nicely merge. When I see that sign, I'll be honest, I don't get over immediately. I start looking for an opportunity between now and the mile when I have to. But I don't do it. Yeah. I must get over there right now because I feel like that almost always bogs down that lane earlier than necessary. And honestly, where I exit for my house on the weekends, that is a lane that merges over and it is an exit to a freeway or it's one of those double exits. 90% of the people on that exit lane are exiting to another freeway. But then there's 10% of us that are actually doing an offshoot that is to the neighborhood I live in.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because of that, I'll be honest, I am a jerk because I need 100 feet of that exit. I need 100 feet of it.
Before you're out of the mix at that point.
You're going to be on it for a mile. I am going to wait as long as I can because I need a tiny little stretch to just get right there. But in general, on this question, I'm somewhere in the middle grounds. I haven't really answered, but I'm giving you all of my thoughts.
All right, Kevin, I'm not trying to pick sides. I'm really not. But my answer is let it happen. And here's why. Let it happen to the point where you know, and not like the guy Todd's talking about at the very end where he's, you know, scraping the cones or scraping the wall,
whatever. We've all seen that guy, and he's just a jerk. He's just a jerk.
But I'm saying to the natural point where everybody kind of sees that, all right, okay, we're alternating. Hey, you go, I go. You go, I go. And you can kind of, that natural point where it starts to happen in the V, in the bottleneck. Because if you immediately get over, you're going to, A, bottleneck that and hold people up behind you, and then people are going to drive left around you on the shoulder and just keep going anyway. So you haven't really solved anything by doing that.
Interesting.
If you just kind of keep going to that natural point, and it just depends, but, you know, we're all adults here, theoretically. People are figuring it out.
Hopefully.
We learned to share in kindergarten, and so we're alternating. And then you see, okay, this and that, because otherwise, you're creating extra traffic. And again, I'm not trying to pick sides. I'm just trying to find that natural point where the alternating has to happen. Otherwise, nobody's going anywhere. It's like everybody has to get off of the elevator before you can get on. You just or off of the subway car, whatever.
You're going to have to wait. Yeah.
You know, I have to wait because I, you know, you physically can't go any farther. So
sure.
I'm if you get over right away, maybe. But the other benefit for doing that is if you keep going in that left lane, there's that accordion effect because people are backed up all the way here. And then right, you've noticed right up near where people start to split, that's when people inexplicably start to accelerate again. And there might be a gap that you can just boop, sneak into without ticking anybody off.
The middle ground, yep.
So that's kind of where, in that accordion effect, if it happens, but anyway, it's very middly, hopefully.
this is a bar fight. It really
it is.
This is one
tiptoeing
that
here,
are take
dancing
sides,
carefully.
Sure. Yep.
But
yep.
Again, I think that would just, the let it happen thinking is hopefully the easiest. All right, what else? Best selection of colors? What manufacturer has the best selection of colors? Have you thought about this question lately?
I have an answer that I think you're going to love, but you may be surprised to hear me say it, but I actually think it's Porsche.
Do you?
Because they can do bland. I don't like bland, but they can do bland. They can do silvers and blacks and grays, and they can do all that. And
chalk.
All of those look very high-end. Then they have those colors that are all their flat colors,
yeah.
Like their chalk putty color, which actually looks okay. And I'm not a person that likes it, but that looks okay. But if you think in that palette, they also have that kind of chalky baby blue, which seems like the weirdest color on the planet for a car, and yet somehow works.
Yeah, right.
And then you can get like that atomic green that came on the Cayennes.
Yeah.
You can get yellow. You can get blue. You can get bright red. You can get paint to sample. You can get crazy purple. I'm having trouble thinking of another car company that does the spectrum that well.
I'd say McLaren is up there. As far as, I mean, they do the custom program too.
Yes,
McLaren,
that's another good
special
one, for
operations.
Sure, for sure.
Aston is kind of up there, but definitely more on the sophisticated side. But BMW has come out with some good colors. That metallic, I'm going to get it wrong, but that mustard color from 01 from the E46 that was one of the first years.
The orange on the 1M is great, yeah.
There was a green, a striking green on the M4 at BMW World in Munich last year.
I see that. Yeah.
There's some interesting stuff. I guess that's interesting, though. It's more towards the higher-end car manufacturers, though.
I agree. Well, I mean, you know, you got to think about volume sellers, though.
Yeah.
Your bright yellow Camry doesn't sell. You know, it just doesn't.
No.
And so, but the thing I don't like is when you get, and I'm going to call out Aston. They've done some colors, but by and large, they don't do colors. By and large, they want to do the grays and the blacks and the James Bond colors, and that's
true.
Fine
it's
all.
Very neutral, sophisticated.
Well, and Mercedes. Mercedes rarely does really cool colors. Sometimes, obviously, they did their new GTS in that crazy, or GTR in that crazy, crazy green, and that was cool to see. But they're not a color company. And then you have a lot of times sports car companies, I'll call out Lotus, everything's bright. It's like you kind of see a dull one and you kind of wonder why they even had that paint available. Porsche is trying to cover everybody, and I think they do a pretty good job. I like your BMW, though, as well.
Yeah. All right. What else did you see on here?
Damn it, Patton asked about the Type R. You know, we just had last weekend's episode was about the Civic Type R. He said, how annoying is not having a volume knob?
Yeah, I saw that.
I'll tell you, really, really, really annoying. I mean, luckily, it does have a thumb pad thing on the steering wheel. But I am not exaggerating when I say that every time I used the slider volume knob on the side of it, I had a fight with it. Every single time.
Sure.
And that, for a car that was genuinely fun to drive, that's why I called it out in the piece, because I couldn't believe. Look, the steering wheel thing saved me. I get it. You may never use the touchscreen. Fine. By the way, the steering wheel thing is not a dial either. It is a graduated little rocker panel thing, which is also kind of annoying, but at least that always worked. The touchscreen, and I don't have cold hands or any of the weird things where touchscreens don't like me. Typically, I'm fine with them, and yet I always fought with that one. So take that as you will.
No, excellent. There was some stuff over on Twitter. I don't know if you noticed that. David P. asked us, how do we feel about tires with directional tread? And I'm generally for it if it offers a performance improvement, but if it's just for the sake of a design, and that does come into play just for that, generally it doesn't. It's usually a collaboration between creating interesting tread pattern and making some performance improvements. But usually it's from the inner shoulder all the way to the outside. Michelin's a great example of this. We love Michelin's. Mm-hmm. They're very different on the inner shoulder. So it's less about the direction, but more about the swap, you know, the inside versus the outside.
Yeah.
So there's a few tires like that. I'm generally fine with it because, you know, generally it's a performance improvement. And if they're telling you this is the way it goes, then all right, you know, that must mean something, if you know what I mean. And I'm open to that.
Okay. I pretty much agree with you. Mark Butler on Twitter actually said something very interesting. I've tried it. It works. Here's a fun game you can play at home. Let's just say put your phone or whatever you're listening to the podcast on, put it on speaker right now and stand by your home Alexa or Echo. Because I'm going to say, Alexa, play the Everyday Driver podcast. If you say that, it works now. She finds it, which is really cool. So maybe I've just automated your own home for you. That's frightening. So if you have one of those Amazon Echo style products and you want to get the podcast on that, we know a few people that have done it before. But I know I had not had much success with it, but Mark said that he was pretty sure that worked for all of them now. I randomly tried it this evening in my kitchen. And look, I was listening to myself in my kitchen, and my wife kind of looked at me like, are we doing this? So I shut it off. But the point is that it does work. So if you're interested, there it is.
There's a question on Instagram. A. McFarlane asked about tips for staying honest with yourself while shopping for a car. And we've alluded to this in the past a little bit, but I really want to come back to projection. Projecting yourself into the usage of your car is the best thing you can do to think, all right, even though I want the sport seats, I'm going to be doing a lot more commuting, and so the regular seats probably would be better for me. They're going to save me a little bit of money, even though it's hard because you want to spec it out. It's a natural tendency to just go down the list and say, well, the sports seats must be better. Well, not always, because what are you going to use it for? You might hate yourself, honestly, for getting whatever it is. And I just use that as an example here. But yeah, you're doing that in your thread here, you know, whether it's the tech pack or, you know, where are you going to be living? All those kinds of things. You've just got to really think down the road and think, okay, 6 months from now, a year from now, how long am I going to keep this car? It's hard to say on every car how long you're going to keep it. Yeah. I get that. Yeah. But generally speaking, it's going to be a couple years. So down the road and just envisioning yourself, all right, I'm going to be really living with this thing and insurance, all that stuff. So projection.
Well, he's asking in general about, do you do the most hardcore spec if you're not going to use it? And my thinking is along your lines, Paul, and that is really think about how you're going to use it. Because here's the thing that happens, and I know I'm going to the extreme of the Lotus Elise owner, but it relates here. You need to think about the sacrifices that are involved the more hardcore a car gets. And if you're okay with those sacrifices in all conditions, then go for it. But if you're not okay with those sacrifices, then that's going to start to kind of undermine your love for the car. And I'm a guy that, I mean, clearly by the car that I drive, I'm okay with the sacrifices because I prefer the gains. But watch me struggle to get out of my car. Watch me sit in there and sweat when it's a really 110-degree hot day and my air conditioner can't keep up. But in the back of my mind, I'm like, yeah, but I asked for this because look what I love out of this car. You have to really have a serious conversation about what are the things I'm willing to sacrifice on a car I drive daily. And everybody's answer is different.
Track Daily Crush, we got to finish on this. It's 1980s royalty from Steve B. asking about...
I saw this.
Oh, you know my answer, Steve. You know what I'm going to say already. Ferrari F40, Porsche 959, and the original roof Yellowbird... And, well, if you live in Germany, your local track is the ring, and your daily drive is, of course, on the de-restricted sections of Autobahn.
Uh-huh.
You know my answer. I'm crushing the Ferrari. I'm sorry, but the F40, I want to drive this car. It intrigues the daylights out of me. Turbocharged Ferraris. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
But the Yellowbird would be my Autobahn car, and I'd track that 959.
Really? You and I are very split on this. I'm kind of surprised how split. I'm crushing the roof. Not because it's not interesting. It's fascinating. It's a fascinating car, but it is a notorious handful. It's a notorious handful.
Yeah,
so I'm crushing
like
the roof.
F40 isn't?
I'm not saying it's not, but it is still an F40. I'm crushing the roof. Oh. I'm dailying the 959 because I think it would be brilliant on the Autobahn every single day. It would be brilliant.
Oh, it would. It would.
And then the F40 is the ring car, which one of two things will happen. I will master it or it will kill me, but I will be laughing either way.
Exactly.
So there you go.
At least you'll be loving it. Holy cow, we've got to draw this to a close. Guys, really appreciate it. We always thank you, but it's you that makes the podcast and your suggestions and the car debates, so keep writing to us. We've got a long list. And I love the topic Tuesdays that are continuing to come in. There's one that I want to cover next Tuesday, and it's from the Reese asking about introducing your friends or just kind of convincing, introducing kids, the next generation of enthusiasts to cars. And then there was somebody else, you know, saying, how do I convince my friends that cars are different and they evoke a different feel just by the car itself? And I think that would be good for us to cover.
4-hour talk right there. I love it. Okay. I'm going to have a whiteboard you're not going to be able to see in bullet points. It's going to be awesome. Yeah.
You're going to whiteboard the process out for me, aren't you?
It's going to be
frightening. Start here. There's going to be bubble charts and graphs and all right. Holy cow, guys, thank you,
Ken. TED Talk. It's going to be terrible. Yeah,
exactly. Can you imagine? All right. Well, guys, thank you again. Really appreciate it. Looking forward to next time. Cheers.